This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts. Free your mind!
Sex worker, and yes, it does. And I am beyond sex worker, wench, found me to mind.
Listen up close while I take it backwards. Oh, okay, begins to gather to me, which I want. I'm not a prostitute,
sex worker,
but I can give you what you want.
Sex worker, damn it.
Get some. You've tuned in to the Vixen Hour. Sex workers setting the record straight on Australia's first gay and lesbian radio station, Joy 94.9. Red Umbrella Radio.
That's right, listeners, you're here on the Vixen Hour on Joy 94.9, and my name is Christian, and I'm your host here every Monday night at 11 p.m. This is your show for exploring life from a sex worker's perspective. This is the only show in Australia entirely produced and presented by sex workers. So yes, if at any time you would like to interact with the program, you can do so by texting in on 0427-JOY-949 or sending us an email at onair@joy.org.au. You can also follow us on social media by going to our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/sexworkerradio. That's facebook.com/sexworkerradio. And if you're a twit or you're on Twitter, you can follow us at Vixen Hour. Let's go to a message.
All discussions presented on Vixen Hour are made in the interest of community information and are not intended to induce any individual to seek employment in the sex industry. For more information in this area, we recommend individuals to get in contact with their local sex work organisation. The Vixen Hour. Everyone has an opinion about sex work. Make yours an informed one.
Joy 94.9.
That's right. Every week here on the Vixen Hour, I'm joined by an amazing co-host who will also be a sex worker. And this week we have the fabulous Eva Sless.
Hi, Christian.
Hi, Eva.
How are you? I'm awesome.
Fantastic. Now, for people who aren't familiar with Eva, Eva is quite known in the blogosphere and on Twitter as, was it at Deliciously Bad?
It is. Yeah, Deliciously Bad.
Fantastic. So, Eva, who are you exactly?
Well, Christian, I'm Eva. I'm a sex worker slash writer slash blogger slash sexpert is sort of the umbrella in which I have been thrust under by social media and by other sort of forms. I am not a regular sex worker anymore due to the fact that most of my other work takes precedent over it just because I've got so much of it. But I've been around the sex industry for many years, working in and out and around the straps, and I've always just loved it. And like I had a discussion on the Book of Face today about the idea of once you're a hooker, you're always a hooker, and you can't take the hooker out of me.
And you know that's one of the fantastic things about sex work is that you know we are able to you know, if we've got other things that we want to do, like art or writing or, you know, whatever, I feel like sex work sort of kind of gives you that flexibility to be able to do that.
It really does. I think it's partly because, you know, firstly, the hours are quite sporadic in work. You can pick and choose your hours and the money is fairly good as well. So you can sort of, you don't have to work that 40-hour week to pay the rent or make ends meet.
Yeah. I don't know how normal people do it. Not that we're abnormal. I'm not saying that at all. excellent. So what sort of writing do you do, Eva? So you have a blog?
I do. I have a blog which started because I had so much writing in so many different places. I had magazine articles. I had website articles. I had blogs. I had radio interviews. I had all sorts of things, and someone suggested I put it all together under one name because I had a million different names that I was writing on under pseudonyms when I first sort of started writing about sex work and all that. And I thought, just put it all together and everyone can find me in the one spot. So there's everything from articles that I wrote for Mother and Baby magazine on talking to your kids about sex. To, you know, stories of my own personal experiences as a sex worker and everything in between, from stories, anecdotes, researched articles, interviews, everything.
Fantastic. And I noticed, just looking through your blog, you do quite what I would think would be a really, really fun job in terms of you test adult toys.
I do. Look, that's actually my main form of income and job at the moment, is a sex toy reviewer and tester. And it's one of the best jobs I think I've ever had in my life. I mean, I get paid to spend a day in bed with awesome products. Yeah, look, some of them not so awesome, but even even a bad day with a, you know, bad toy is still better than, you know, the best day in an office.
So, yeah, yeah, fantastic.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
That's how, and do you have any advice for, I guess, people looking to sort of write blogs? So, you know, for people who do have a lot of experience wanting to put those ideas out there.
Just do it. Don't expect to get anything out of it. Don't expect people to read it. Don't expect people to pay you money for it. Don't expect anything, but it's really cathartic to get it out, even if that's all it is just getting it out. It's a great way to sort of express yourself.
Fantastic. Now, here at the Vixen Hour, we do have a new co-host every week. And one of the questions that I ask co-hosts to contribute, we sort of started this conversation back in our very first episode last week around what is sex work. And, you know, the conclusion we came to was that sex work is very different for everybody, and everybody sort of defines it in their own way. And it starts to become problematic if you have just one definition.
So, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So part of what we try to do here at the Vixen Hour on Joy 94.9 is explore the diverse meanings of sex work. So, Eva Sless, what does sex work mean to you?
It means a few things, but I think the main thing and the main experiences I got out of it as well as that is freedom and fun and, you know, experience and excitement. I really enjoy my work, and I enjoyed it so much when I did it full time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I really find it liberating.
Ah, oh, fantastic.
Yeah.
you rarely read that in a textbook, folks.
And, you know, like you asked, sort of, you know, the ways it's changed over the over the years. And I think the main thing it's done is actually solidified those feelings. I always thought it would be kind of an exciting experience, and I was really pleased that it was for me.
Yay. And it's a bit, it's always an adventure, I feel.
A complete adventure. Every minute is different in sex work. It's fantastic.
Excellent. And what different types of sex work have you done?
Well, my initial sort of into the sex industry was working as a manager in a brothel, and running a brothel and looking after girls and being a hostess and talking to clients. And then working on phones as an escort agency, and then just going, no, I need to jump over the desk and do this for myself. Yeah. That's where I really want to be.
Fantastic.
So I suppose it's amazing kind of conglomeration of all sorts of different things that came in, and I went, nope, I'm going to go out and I'm going to do it. I'm going to be a sex worker. And I did it, and I was a sex worker.
That's fantastic. No regrets.
No regrets at all.
Absolutely, you shouldn't.
Look, you know, if I do have one regret, it's that I didn't do it earlier,
Yeah, right. You know, whenever I ask people, you know, if they have any regrets about sex work, that's quite often a very common answer, is that, you know, there was so much, I guess, stigma that held them back, and that was the hardest thing to get over for a lot of people. And it's like, you know, if I knew that it wasn't as bad as a lot of people made me think it was, I would have done it way sooner.
Oh, see, no, it wasn't the stigma for me. No, I always wanted to do it. I've got proof of me about 12 saying, writing in a diary that I was going to do it when I was older. No, I've always known.
Wow.
No, it was more the building up my own inner confidence and being ready. And I'm really glad I waited, because I think that, you know, when you're not in that right space, but I think that, you know, if I'd done it earlier, then, you know, even more experiences.
You never know. You are on the Vixen Hour on Joy 94.9. We do have to go to a couple of messages. But on tonight's show, the reason I've brought in Eva is because Eva is a writer. And this program of the Vixen Hour is going to focus on the words and the meaning and the language that we use to describe sex work. So as I said before, if at any time you want to interact with the program, you can do so by texting in on 0427 Joy 949, calling Robert at the front desk on 1300 Joy 949, or sending us an email at onair@joy.org.au.
Thank you for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
You're here on the Vixen Hour on Joy 94.9 with Christian, and I'm joined by the fabulous Eva.
Hey.
Hey. So on tonight's show, we will be talking about words, the language, words and meanings of around sex work. We'll be starting off talking about the controversial debate around the term prostitute versus sex worker. We'll also examine some of the synonyms associated with sex work and different words for sex worker, as well as playing some of our interview with the fabulous best-selling Australian author, Kate Holden. But to start off, I thought we might go for the meaty part. The debate that is using the word prostitute versus sex work. It's a controversial one.
It is. It's a big word, prostitute. Really is a big word, and it really conveys and brings up so many different emotions and visions and sort of, you know, connotations to people.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. And, you know, a lot of this sort of debate was very much formalised back in 2006 when two organisations decided to put out terminology guides around sex work and, at the time, the issue of human trafficking. And those two organisations are very telling about the approach that they had when they said, you know, which words that they preferred. So the first organisation was the Faith Action Against Slavery and Trafficking, which was a branch of the Salvation Army in the United States. And they published a terminology guide advising people to use the word prostitute, prostituted people, prostituted women and prostitution. And the reason they said that, I've printed out the guide. Did you want to read out?
Yeah, I will, because it's quite a, well, I'll read it out and then we'll discuss it.
Yeah, but absolutely.
This is in the terms to use and why, and this is the point form as to why we should use prostituted persons, prostituted people, and the word prostitute. Those who view prostitution as a form of violence and as inherently exploitative advocate for the adoption of terms such as those above. While accurately conveying the activity that is occurring, i.e. prostitution, the term neither labels the person involved with a pejorative term nor normalises prostitution as just another form of work. They are indicative of prostitution as an experience, not a state of being. These terms help express the idea that persons in the sex industry are caught up in the exploitative system of the prostitution industry.
You're right. So, you know,
heavy,
isn't it?
Yeah.
And, you know, if you sort of characterize, I guess, well, what they're terming prostitution as, you know, exploitation and violence against women, it's really easy to see why their approach is, oh, we just need to shut down the whole industry, get in there and rescue these poor women.
And that's sort of when you have these sort of rescue organizations that talk about, you know, prostituted people, they really are using the negative sides of the industry as their basis for work. And you know, there are some negative sides to the industry, which we all know and understand. However, they give no allowance for a positive side or for a...
Or to acknowledge that somebody would make that choice.
That's right.
In sort of in this definition and understanding of, well, what they're terming prostitution, everybody needs to be rescued because clearly everybody's a victim.
Well, that's right.
So, but another organisation in 2006 released a terminology guide, and that was the UNAIDS. So that's the Joint United Nations Program on HIV/AIDS. That's a, you know, international best practice public health body, and they put out a terminology guide, and the whole point of putting out their terminology guide, according to them, was to make recommendations about language usages that were scientifically accurate, that promote universal human rights and the dignity of the individual, that are easily understood and respect how individuals and groups of people choose to refer to themselves. Now, this was the first time a document had urged everybody to say the words people living with HIV AIDS as opposed to AIDS victim, which was a common vernacular at the time. And at the same, in the same breath, if you can understand why we would use the, you know, those preferred terms, we can see how they've defined sex worker. So coming from the UNAIDS terminology guide, they've said the term sex worker is intended to be non-judgmental and focuses on the working conditions under which sexual services are sold. Sex workers include consenting female, male and transgender adults. adults and young people over the age of 18 who receive money or goods in exchange for sexual services, either regularly or occasionally. Acceptable alternative formulations of the term sex worker are women slash men slash people who sell sex, clients who may be called men slash women slash people who buy sex, and children selling sex under the age of 18 are considered victims of commercial sexual exploitation unless otherwise determined. And I think that's a really, that last bit's a really interesting delineation between what is sex work and what
isn't.
And
what is not sex work.
That's
and so,
right.
And I'm really quite sort of pleased and, you know, it's sad that we have to have these things, you know, that make the distinction, but I think it's really important and it's really responsible of this organisation to make that difference and to say this is not sex work, this is exploitation, this is trafficking, this is illegal, this is a victim.
Absolutely. And, you know, to have a harm reduction approach is to actually identify and be clear about what those harms are. Mm. And if you're talking about, I guess, sex workers in any context throughout the world, whatever that may be, the harms associated or that they may encounter are very different to those who are, you know, genuine victims of child exploitation or whatever.
And when you look at the sort of two different forms from the Faith Action Group and from the UNAIDS group, you can really see which one is looking at people as individuals and which is just lumping everybody in together as one sort of group of stereotypes. It's quite telling, really is.
Absolutely. Look, we'd like to know what the listener thinks. They can text in on 0427JOY949. Like we said at the beginning of the show, this is a program all about the words and meanings around sex work. And I thought we might play now a little bit of an interview that we had with best-selling Australian author Kate Holden.
She's fabulous. Loved her.
People might be familiar with Kate. She's appeared heaps on First Tuesday Book Club and writing festivals. She had a regular column in The Age. And this is what our conversation with her sounded like.
You can have your say. SMS 0427JOY949.
So you're on the Vixen Hour on Joy 94.9 and you're here with Christian and Ava. And we are joined in this studio by the best-selling Australian author, Kate Holden, who wrote her fascinating memoir, In My Skin, about being a street-based sex worker, heroin user. A lot of people describe it as a very brave piece of writing.
That's another adjective I get a lot, brave.
Yeah. I always, when people talk about sex workers, particularly sex workers who are very publicly out about what they do, I think brave is a word that does get
brave
used.
Brave is brave and courageous.
Just, yeah.
They're words that, you know, they're nice words, but they're also a little bit bullshit.
Yeah. It's a bit of a worry, isn't it, when someone says you've been so brave to talk about your work.
To be you.
Yeah.
Like, oh, no.
It is almost like the ultimate backhanded compliment for a sex worker, as if like what you did was so frowned upon to speak about it actually takes...
At all.
Yeah.
But the other thing I also got all the time was searingly honest, which makes it sound, again, it's a nice kind of way of saying something that is good, but they say searingly as if it's something that kind of like blisteringly, painfully, you know, because I talked about sex work quite frankly in the book, and I got a lot of people coming up to me with kind of shocked looks.
Yeah.
You know, going, it's searingly honest. As if I just sunburnt them or something, you know, just throw boiling water all over them.
Yeah.
And I guess I think that's part of the shock I got when they read my book, which was that I wasn't at all sorry.
Yeah.
that's the curious thing. I find I get that a lot as well, is that, you know, oh, you're so open about it. And it's like, well, it's because it's my life.
Yeah.
And we do understand that there are people that keep it secret, but the ones that don't aren't doing anything particularly special or spectacular.
Yeah.
They're just being themselves.
Absolutely. And to write candidly about, say, sex intercourse in a book about sex work is not a big ask.
And it's not like nobody knew what the book was going to be about. So it's not like you've sort of shocked them by writing a book about elephants and then this big sort of, by the way, I was a heroin addict prostitute.
That's
it's not
my vagina.
Yeah.
That's right. Where did this come from? No, exactly. I think it would have been weird if you wrote a book about sex work which didn't talk about the sex
at all.
Sex words and didn't have all of those kind of things.
And, you know, you find that people who write about sex work who have not been in the industry or who are quite negative about the industry often don't talk about sex at all. It's all very much about the bad sort of the exploitation.
Yeah, but the interesting feeling that I get when somebody says the word brave is that I don't disagree with them.
Like, because I sort of identify that there is a certain amount of bravery that it takes to sort of, you know, do what we do. But I don't think they quite understand what that bravery is. I sort of identify that bravery as overcoming the social stigma that's quite often imposed upon us. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm just wondering, how do you take that compliment? Like, do you see what you've done as a brave thing to do? And if so, like, how is it so?
Well, look, I think I'm probably like all of us here that I didn't set out to be a, you know, brave spokesperson for the sex industry. That wasn't my mission.
Yeah.
I just wanted to write about my experiences, and I wanted to write about them really honestly. I guess if I'm being candid, I probably wanted to be a little bit provocative by being searingly honest, because mm-hmm. I really wanted to show people how hypocritical social attitudes had been. There was a certain bravery in confronting all of that, but I don't think it was very brave for me to write anything down. I think maybe the bravest moment was when I took my first draft into a workshopping group at the writing course that I was in at RMIT, and I read stuff aloud for the first time.
Yeah, wow.
And I just remember I didn't look up because my colleagues in the room were people I'd already met, known for a year or so.
Uh-huh.
And some of them had no idea about my story. And I just remember this kind of vacuum sound in the room when I finished reading, and I just looked up really slowly, and they all just went, wow. And then asked like 70 billion questions
about
really supportive and interested and all the rest of it. So once I got that support from them and realized that people were not going to like faint mm-hmm. on the spot, I was fine.
I'm wondering, Kate, you've sort of been thrust into
bestsellerdom.
Not only bestsellerdom, but I guess, you know, the ultimate challenge to the stereotype, basically. I'm wondering if that was sort of a deliberate thing you thought of like prior to completing writing the book, or if that's something that sort of came after everyone bought it.
Yeah, look, I don't know what I thought I was doing. All I wanted to do was really write the story of what really happens in 100 legal brothels in Melbourne every night of the year. And I just thought, I am not the only person in the world that's had this experience. In fact, I am one of absolutely many, many, many thousands, hundreds of thousands of women.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a story worth telling. So I didn't really set out to shock anyone, but I very quickly found myself marketed as the nice girl who'd gone slumming.
Yeah.
And despite the fact that I would say that my book was absolutely a refutal of all the kind of easy answers, and I don't repent at the end, and I'm not this kind of Mary Magdalene, you know, mm-hmm. crying through my hair and all that kind of thing. Nevertheless, I am inevitably presented as a girl from the leafy suburbs.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You know, there were no trees in my street. But, you know, I went to a normal kind of state school, and I had, you know, lower middle class parents who happened to be bookish people. I get presented as someone who went to St. Cath's. My parents drove a four-wheel drive. I mm-hmm. grew up in Hawthorne, whatever it was that people think.
The pretty little rich girl gone bad.
Yeah, and I went to the wrong side of the tracks, and then I fought my way back, and how brave I am for having done that. And it just mm-hmm. frustrates the hell out of me, because that's not what I thought I was saying at all.
Mm.
And it's about people reinforcing, you know, easier stories, because that's much more easy to understand than their daughter, who's mm-hmm. also a nice middle class, you know, university educated girl, may also, you know, and that's, I think sometimes they like the old stories.
Mm. Yeah.
So I kind of find myself constantly fighting against either, you know, nice middle class girl went slumming, or let me introduce former heroin addict, former prostitute. Hold it.
I'm
like, oh, Jesus.
Words.
You know, when I left high school, that wasn't what I was expecting to be referred to for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
You know,
it's interesting, isn't it, the way that words, like, and I suppose what our entire show today is about, is how words can make or break a thing, a person, a situation, the word you use to describe it. And you're right, saying former heroin addict or former prostitute, not even using sex worker as a term, or good girl gone bad, it does, and it's got this seedy air of kind of, you know, underbelly to it. And, and that's what people kind of want to grab onto.
But it's okay, because you're former.
Former. Emphasize that. If I turned up with the feet hanging out of my arm, you know, reeking of sex, obviously things would go different.
Because I am often referred to as a former sex worker, because I don't mm-hmm. work full time anymore. I work so rarely because I've got so many other things. And I didn't go into retirement. I didn't quit the industry because I got burnt out of it. I just got too many other things on. So I get referred to as a former sex worker. And then I'll tweet something about a job I did and people jump on me.
Yeah.
Are you back in? The words really can make or break you.
You can have your say. SMS 0427 JOY 949.
A voice for sex workers. The Vixen Hour. On Joy 94.9.
That's right, you're on the Vixen Hour here on Joy 94.9, and you're with Christian, and I'm joined by Eva.
Hello, everybody.
We've had a text message in from Viola of support. Thank you, Viola. We also had a message from Anna from the CBD. He rang in to comment that the psychological toll on sex workers that sex workers experience after a period of working is not discussed enough and not spoken enough before she started working in the industry either. And I think that's a really important point, that it's really hard to find really good information out there.
It really is. There's no training. There's no TAFE course. There's no anything.
Look, certificate for in harlotry. That would be amazing.
No, that's right. There should be one. And my friends and I discuss this a lot. We actually run our own workshops. You know, blatant publicity here. I'll give you some information when we're running the next one.
Yeah.
But on, you know, information on the legalities of sex work, the realities of sex work, the good, the bad, the ugly, the everything, really needs to be known about, because all we hear about is the media telling us that it's terrible and it's bad and it's dirty and it's wrong. And then you get people like me standing up going, oh, it's brilliant, it's fun, whatever.
Yeah.
But you don't really have that training. You don't have anything that can tell you how to deal with certain situations. And, I agree. I think there needs to be a lot more out there.
Absolutely. And look, we might post those links up on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/sexworkerradio. Excellent. I think I thought what we might talk about now is the different synonyms for sex worker that are out there, because there's a whole list.
Oh, there's a million and we love them. We love most of them.
Some of them can be quite playful. Some of them can be quite fun. And some of them can be a bit disrespectful.
Well, so, they can. And it can also be something that is quite disrespectful in a certain way, but then in another way it's not.
Yeah, so I thought we might run through some of the common ones, and particularly the history of these words, where they came from.
Mm.
So the first one I'm going to throw out there is hooker.
Oh, I love the word hooker. I really do. I like it because it's succinct.
Yep.
It says what it says.
Yeah.
Everybody knows what you mean.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't really have a really bad, it doesn't come from a bad place, really.
Yeah.
It doesn't come from, you know, a Latin word meaning pig rolling in mud or whatever, you know. It's the name of somebody.
Yeah, so just to go through a little bit of history, the term was popularly credited to General Fighting Joe Joseph Hooker because of a visit to Washington, D.C. during the American Civil War. He was appalled at the vice around the Capitol, so appalled that he rounded up all the lower class brothel workers and street-based sex workers and made them practice all in the same area, which became known as Murder Bay. And that was in New York City in around 1845. And it was used to describe sex workers who worked at the... It was also used to describe sex workers who worked at the dock, Collier Hook. So although it was used to describe General Hooker's people, it's actually sort of... And if you go to the website World Wide Words, which is run by this amazing linguist, Michael Quinion, he actually debunks that myth, because the word hooker was actually used before then. And it was likely a combination of events that occurred to create the term. A painting entitled Hooking a Victim from 1851 shows a night scene of streetwalkers soliciting customers. The title refers to a method of sex work used to see if a man was interested in her service. She would point in the direction that she was walking in, and if the man offered her arm, she would hook hers into his, and thus became known as a hooker.
I like that. I like that a little bit more than, you know, being named after Hooker, which is still, it's, you know, it's his area, and this is where he put all the sex workers, you know, because he wanted them. Yeah, and in that sense, I go, oh, not nice. But the idea of hooking your arm through somebody's and travelling off in the direction in which is quite it's quite nice.
And I like that it sort of brings in sort of that level of discretion that people, like, because quite often people think, you know, street-based sex workers or publicly soliciting sex workers are, you know, bold and in your face. And
that's another term. A few people think that the word hooking comes from snaring, hooking, like hooking a fish and snaring a customer or snaring a client. And, you know, I think it might, there might be parts of it that are from there, but mm-hmm. the hooking of the arm and the Corlea's hook, I think, are probably more likely.
Yeah,
Okay,
they're nicer.
We'll like those. Yes, you know, another one that I quite like, which is quite nice, which is one of the only ones that hasn't come from another. Well, you know, I was saying, you know, with some kind of connotation of dirt or, mm-hmm. or you know, disgust
trollop.
Or something, yeah, trollop yeah. or slurry or
yeah, yeah.
any of that, is the word tart.
Uh-huh.
And even though tart is something we don't really use very often, mm-hmm. it actually
Delicious.
Comes from. But I love tarts, you know. I love all sorts of tarts. And it comes from a jam tart,
yeah.
which was a British slang for a beautiful girl or a pretty mm-hmm. girl. So to tart yourself up or to get tarted up or something is to make yourself pretty. And so I kind of think, oh, well, it's actually not, you know, that bad.
Yeah. No, I do like, and tarts are yummy.
They are.
And sweet. So, yeah, and I think
just like me.
Just like us. The other two common words I want to talk about are harlot and whore.
Mm.
This definition comes from the Scarlet Alliance webpage, and we might post links to that.
We
on
love
our
the Scarlet
Facebook.
Alliance.
So that's the National Association of Sex Workers. And they give us a bit of a history. So Ishtar was the primary Babylonian deity, a goddess strongly associated with sex work. As the whore of Babylon, Ishtar is proudly oversaw the continuing tradition of sacred sex work, announcing on a stone tablet which still exists today, "A harlot, compassionate am I." One of her titles was the great goddess Ha, mother of harlots. Her high priestesses, known as the Harin, were spiritual rulers of her city, of the city of Ishtar. Ha can be read as a cognate of the Persian Huri, sacred temple whores and dancing girls. They were ladies of the hour. Each ruled a certain hour of the night and marked the hours of the night by whirling dances. The oldest authentic Hebrew folk dance is still called a hora, after the circle of dances.
I've done the hora. And to be honest, until right now, I did not know that that's what it represented.
There you go.
Or where it stemmed from.
The ancient Greeks also had a word hore, which also may be which is the origin of the word harem, which formerly meant a temple of women or a sanctuary for women. The term harlot finds its basis in the word harlot comes from whore priestesses who were employed in Ishtar's temple administering sacred sacraments to worshippers who would leave offerings at the temple for the upkeep and the priestesses and in honour of the god Ishtar. It's a really nice...
It is. It's, you know, I mean, you have a lot of people that will get a bit funny about the whole whore worship thing and say, mm-hmm. oh, it's still putting on a pedestal, it's still, you know, creating
right.
a difference, it's still this. But I think that if they're looking at it from the boundaries of our own experiences and our own social life and our own social memory that we have, you know, this is hundreds of, you know, 1,000 years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a much different idea of feminine worship and
yeah.
female worship and whore worship and sexual worship. And
yeah.
I think these are really... They're more about mother and earth and goddess and all
yeah.
that rather than...
And the sacred role of women
yeah.
in a community as well. And in that way, I think it's like, it's funny how these words have a basis that's much more feminist than what contemporary feminists describe as sex work today.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's a real a comfort about the worship of sex
yeah.
and sexuality. And I think, you know, it was men and women who worshipped at the temples as well. So it wasn't just about these women presenting themselves to men.
Mm-hmm.
It was about worshipping the feminine. And I think that's a really important thing. We should all do it anyway.
Yeah.
We should all worship, you know, the feminine, because feminine is lovely.
Absolutely. We could talk about this all night, but unfortunately we do have to play some messages. You're listening to the Vixen Hour on Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
You're on the Vixen Hour on Joy 94.9. We're now going to play the second half of our interview with Kate Holden and hope you enjoy it. You can always text in on 0427 JOY 949 or send us an email at onair@joy.org.au.
We have the fresh sound you're looking for.
Joy 94.9.
I wanted to talk a little bit about, I guess, the tone and the experiences that we do portray. So quite often, if we sort of present sex work as an entirely positive experience that, you know, it's the best thing in the world and whatever, we're accused of being non-representative. Like, that couldn't possibly be how it is for everybody. Or, you know, we're stereotyped as the happy hooker who is so deluded about how much they enjoy their work that, you know, they're actually not coming from a genuine space. Or as soon as you describe one bad experience, that becomes the whole story. And that's, you know, that's evidence of why we should abolish the whole sex industry. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering, like, you know, it's a constant thing that something I certainly consider every time I put something out is a bit of a balance. And I'm wondering how you guys manage to do that and the strategies that you have for yourself.
Yeah, look, listeners can't see this, but Eve and I are both nodding furiously all through that last paragraph of Christian's. Absolutely. It's just the most exhausting thing to think that you have to be perpetually on one side or the other. Yeah. When I wrote my book, I had actually no inkling of sex worker politics, this kind of schisms in feminism, the issues around all sorts of things. I had no idea that was what I was walking into. Mm. I was just telling my truth. Mm-hmm. But I have since been broadly educated in the fact that this is a very contentious area.
Yeah.
And yes, the terminology you use, the narratives you apply, the kind of associates you have, the people you are seen, mm-hmm. you know, to read or witness or anything like that, will absolutely identify you one side or the other.
Mm-hmm.
And I think because it is such a bitter kind of ideological struggle, you're right, we're so driven to present an all or nothing kind mm-hmm. of narrative. And anytime I would ever describe anything about sex work, if I said something like, oh, and then there was a time that really nasty guy, blah, 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 people would look appalled and deeply sympathetic, sincerely sympathetic, but say, oh my God, didn't you just want to stop working after that?
Mm.
And I'd think, well, you know, as you said before, Eva, everyone has a bad day. Mm-hmm. You know, if I say that I sometimes had to put anesthesia on my vagina because it hurt, well, lots of people have jobs which are physically hard work.
Yeah.
You know, lots of people go home from tradie jobs with blisters.
I've got
and
a friend who's a psychiatric nurse, and I tell you, he is attacked at work more often than I've never been attacked at work, so mm-hmm. I can't actually say more often than I, because one attack is more often than I.
It's not nice to be attacked.
Nobody would say to him, well, you should get out of that industry because of that. Everyone makes sure he's okay. And it's like, but yeah.
Absolutely. It's just, you know, it's this idea that you apply these ridiculous standards to one group that you would never dream of applying to others.
Yeah.
And, but it is absolutely very much, it has to be like a coherent narrative. Otherwise, people mm-hmm. don't respect. And I think that just speaks to, as we've been saying all through this program, the fact that it's a really strong project of resistance, like mm-hmm. resisting all the kind of shit that's thrown at sex workers in terminology, in attitude, in expectations, in, you know, stories, in how they formulate your stories for you. Every single step of it feels mm-hmm. like you have to kind of resist. And one of those things is resisting the temptation to make the story according to their rules.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because we sort of break new ground for people. It's like they have to apply all of these testers for us. Mm. Like, you know, that we somehow have to fit into their understanding of it, whether it is, you know, there are good guys and bad guys and victims in the world, and which column do you fit in? Mm. As opposed to, actually, this is a human story where nobody neatly fits into any of those
categories.
Yeah,
there are no good guys or bad guys. No. It's mm-hmm. just guys.
That's
people.
People, yeah.
Absolutely. I think it's kind of funny because it reminds me about how much time I spent as a sex worker educating my clients about stuff like safe sex, you know, sexual mm-hmm. diseases, using condoms, using dental dams, all those kind of things. I spent, you know, maybe a quarter of my time being a nurse, you know, giving people basic 101, sex education 101, because so many people had no idea.
Yeah. They really don't.
And this was a huge part of my function in my profession, was to educating people. But that's still kind of, even 10 years since I stopped working, that's still part of what we do. Mm-hmm. And it's a part of sex work, which I think is rarely acknowledged.
Yeah.
That we actually educate people really strongly in good behavior.
Yeah.
Or try. You know, we had that little book underneath the mattress of all the horrible sexual diseases you can get with the spectacular tropical ones.
Oh, which were amazing, the pictures.
The pictures,
photographs.
Pustules.
Embarrassing bodies, eat your heart out. That's the book. That's
and I'd take it out. I'd shove it in front of my clients. I'm like, that's what happens, you know.
Yeah.
Well, I picked up clients who seemed to have testicular cancer. I had all these different things happening which were really important that I pay attention to and which my mm-hmm. clients were hopefully grateful for. But kind of going back to the bit where people aren't always appreciative about being educated. sophisticated. I remember one client I had who was a young man, came in very drunk late on a Saturday night, came in, he said in a very broad country accent, "I want to learn how to please a lady." And I said, "Sweetheart, I'm your lady." And took him in and he was adorable. And he's like, "I'm, you know, so I've never really been with girls much, but I really want to know how to please a lady." We got in there. I started, you know, doing the booking and everything else. And I said, "Oh, well, yeah, look, this is my body. This is what, you know," I turned the lights up a little bit. I said, "Now, this is my clitoris." Mm-hmm. At which he went absolutely pale, leapt to his feet, ran across the room, bashed into the glass shower head first, grabbed his blunt stones and his underpants and just ran out of the room as fast as he could. This look of stricken horror, because apparently he'd never seen a lady before.
Wow.
Maybe only sheep, I don't know. And he was so horrified. I was like, "Well, I did try."
Oh,
yeah. I really tried.
Oh, that's poor boy.
He was so, especially since he ended up on the street in his underpants and his boots. But I thought, "Oh, well, sweetheart, someone else will have to educate you." "This is my clitoris. Off he goes." And I was like, "It's not that bad."
And what was he expecting?
I don't know. He was quite drunk. Uh-huh. And it was late at night, but the look on his poor little face.
Oh.
Maybe he was better off with the sheep.
Oh.
I think it's so funny when you tell these little human stories of people. And, you know, I've just met so many fantastic people through the work that I can't imagine, you know, my world is richer for of working, and my social knowledge and my knowledge in general is bigger. I've met people from all around the world, from all different walks of life and different careers and different spaces, different religions or political aspirations or views or whatever. And I've grown as a person because of it. I've learnt so much. Who I was 10 years ago is so different to who I am now.
Yeah.
And I have to thank sex work.
We could talk about this forever, but unfortunately we have come to the end of our time here with Kate Holden. I want to thank you, Kate, for being so generous and coming and joining us here on the Vixen Hour on Joy 94.9.
Oh, it's so my pleasure. And I'm so excited about this show. You guys are so much fun. I want to hang out with you all the time.
We might have you back in the future.
No, definitely.
Yeah, yeah.
And me too.
Yeah, yes, definitely.
Yeah.
You're on the Vixen Hour on Joy 94.9.
The fresh sound you're looking for, Joy 94.9.
How good was it hanging out with Kate Holden?
That was fantastic. I've you know, read so much of Kate's work, and I actually, it was interesting when she was talking about the workshopping group that she read her story out, because the year later I actually did that exact same class.
Wow.
And my book that I've been writing, which, you know, we won't discuss my book because it's, you know, nothing's happening with it. But I did very similar. I sat there and read out my sort of sex stories, very different experiences and a very different style and a different sort of, you know, ethos of around the whole book.
And did you get the same reaction?
But I got the same reaction, that kind of silence and then bombarded with questions.
Yeah,
everyone's so interested in this line of work.
Oh, absolutely. And that's the thing. Like we were saying to our texter before, Anna from the CBD, there just isn't enough discussion and talk and information out, like real genuine information from the actual people who work in the sex industry out there, which is why sex workers have put together a radio show.
And it's brilliant.
And people are listening to it right now.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
You are listening to the Vixen Hour on Joy 94.9, and Eva Sless, we have come to the end of the concert.
Oh, I knew it would go so fast. Can't we make it another hour? Everyone will listen.
Yeah,
it'll be fine.
We'll just completely bump off the rest of the overnight and just take over the whole radio station, and hopefully no one will notice. No, I'm kidding. We do have to stick to it. I want to thank you, Eva.
Thank you for having me, Christian. It's been so much fun.
Yeah, no, it has been. And as we've been saying constantly throughout this episode, it has been an absolutely rewarding experience to be able to, you know, bring the genuine voices of sex workers to the community, because how often do you get to hear from us?
I think it's fantastic because you've really do need to have this voice out there, a voice of positivity, a voice of expression, and just a voice of reality, because the thing is, it's just a bloody job.
Yeah, yeah.
And you kind of get sick of defending it all the time, but I think that we need to. I think that, you know, it will get to a stage in our life where we won't need to defend it as rigorously, but I think it's such a It's a great thing. But it's a great thing that we have this voice and this outlet to speak about it.
Absolutely. So I want to thank, we've received a message, love the Vixen Hour so much, on your people, hugs, and that's from Anonymous Texter 841. Thank you for that.
Oh, thanks Anonymous Texter 841.
And I want to thank Anna and Viola for her for their messages of support.
Thanks, guys.
That we got earlier. I forgot to thank the warm and fuzzy guys of the Cubby House who were on the show before us. And at the top of the hour, I did play Amy Winehouse's You Know I'm No Good, and I posted that on Facebook, and I wanted to see if people got the connection between that song and tonight's topic being, you know, words, meanings, and sex workers as writers. And no one seemed to have guessed that on the Facebook page. But
too cryptic.
Yeah, it was a bit of a loose connection. The connection is actually that song, or a riff in that song, is actually used as the theme song for Secret Diary of a Call Girl, and that was written by a sex worker. And then we have sex worker writers presenting on this episode. So, yeah. All in my brain. That is the Vixen Hour for another week. Next week we'll be joined by the fabulous Nada Fellaini and Jane Green from the Scarlet Alliance. We'll be talking about the media and stigma and the role that the media plays in perpetrating the stigma against sex workers and how we experience that. So it's going to be a jam-packed show. There's going to be an amazing analysis of how that has happened over the past 12 months. Everybody tune in. It's going to be exciting. You can keep up with us on social media, following us on our Facebook page at facebook.com/sexworkerradio, as well as on Twitter at Vixen Hour.
Thanks for listening, everyone.
It has been a tremendous show. Thank you, Eva.
Thank you, Christian.
We'll catch you next week.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.